You remember a few years ago when big tobacco was the big target of litigation? Hundreds of millions of dollars in lawyers' fees, hours and hours of courtroom time, fines, settlements, etc., etc., etc. What do you do once you've beaten down on your target? Well, you find another target. What's that new target going to be? Walter Olson says it's going to be not big tobacco anymore, but big cola. Coke and Pepsi are going to find themselves in the crosshairs of new legislation. In many cases, from some of the same people who are behind the battles against big tobacco. Walter is senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He has a great website called overlawyered.com. And has written an op-ed piece that appears in the Los Angeles Times today on exactly this subject. So I've invited him to come on and talk about it this afternoon on the Paul Harris Show. Hi, Walter.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. So why is big cola, as you call it, in the crosshairs?
Well, for the last few years, a bunch of lawyers have been trying to make a go out of what we call obesity suits, namely, I'm fat and it's someone's fault and someone has to pay for it. And as you may remember, a couple years ago, there were suits against McDonald's and Wendy's and Burger King, which were widely laughed at by the general public and are still in court, but people don't expect them to do all that well. So some of the lawyers and law professors who have been in this area for 10 years or more and were involved in the tobacco fight gone back to the drawing board and say we need a cleverer choice of targets. And a few weeks ago, there was a flurry about their announcement that they're going to go after Coke and Pepsi over the shock and horror of, you're not going to believe this, but soda pop is actually drunk by kids.
Huh.
Yes, believe it or not, my kid even wants it. And they say that therefore they owe damages for, if not the obesity, and maybe the obesity too, then the fact that these bottles and cans are not plastered with warnings the way cigarette packs are. In fact, Professor Daynard of Northeastern University Law School, who I criticize in my piece, said that a Coke vending machine is very much like letting a cigarette vending machine onto school grounds.
Is there any medical proof of what he just of what you of his claim?
Well, we know that drink too much of these things and you're going to be seeing your doctor and especially your dentist more often, maybe not your doctor for a long time. Your dentist is going to hear from you sooner than that. They look into these things and they realize generally not as healthy as milk if you're going to have them have the diet variety. This is not exactly news to people watching their weight or to most parents watching their kids' diets. As with most foods, though, and in contrast to tobacco, I think most doctors would say that in moderation, if you're just having a can or a bottle here or there, it's not really much to worry about. You can have lemonade or a lot of other natural drinks and be doing about as much damage to your teeth and your waistline. And again, as with most food and drink, it's a matter of excess or not excess. Don't do it to excess, and you probably are not going to have to worry much.
Are these the same people who are behind the drive to get soda and candy out of schools?
Well, the drive to get soda and candy out of schools is a wider kind of thing. There are a lot of people involved in there who aren't lawyers and aren't pressing for lucrative lawsuits, but they have observed the success. A lot of cities and some states, including California, have now moved to crack down on vending machines in the schools. And one thing I suspect they're doing is it's called front-running. Lawyers notice a social trend that's already in progress. They step forward. They take credit for it. So a couple years later, they say, I deserve fees for having advanced this social trend. Well, even if no one files a lawsuit, there is probably going to be continued agitation because people are just more aware of these issues now. The schools are in loco parentis. There's an old-fashioned phrase. And, as parents, we may not want them dishing out lots of stuff that we wouldn't necessarily give our kids ourselves.
Well, I don't know any school that's dishing out soda and cookies and candy. In most cases, it's a kid who's getting one every once in a while. while, and having been in school cafeterias and seeing what kids actually do eat, if they go over and they have a couple of little mini donuts every once in a while, I don't think that that's what's responsible for a kid being fat. It's more likely the rest of the diet that mom and dad are feeding them.
And that's it. It is very rare that someone is getting fat on school food who is learning proper eating habits at home. Most of the schools, again, there's a wide range of policies, but most of the schools say that you can't get at the vending machines as part of your school lunch anyway. It's the sort of thing that people use when they're going to go out on the playing field for after-school practice, when they need some energy. There are lots of very plausible reasons to make snacks available when they are not displacing a good lunch. So you've got a situation that has a lot of shades of gray, and unfortunately the way that these things get debated tends to turn them into, the evil people are trying to profit at the expense of your kid. Well, if you're raising the kid right, that's not the hardest thing they're going to have to turn down during their childhood.
Is this all about childhood obesity? Because in America, if you bring the kids in, it's always a cause celeb. But is it all about kids drinking soda, or is it about adults drinking soda and getting fat?
It starts out with talk about kids, but if you look at what the activists and the lawyers are saying, I quote in my piece, Michael Jacobson is probably the best known food nanny, if you want to be pejorative.
That's a great word for him.
Yeah. And he has said, not just talking about kids, but talking generally, that if someone has gotten obese after drinking 64-ounce soft drinks from the 7-Eleven, then they, quote, deserve their day in court, unquote. Not just kids, everyone.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
That's what he said.
Somebody goes to 7-Eleven and gets a super big gulp of Mountain Dew. And now they've got a lawsuit?
They were tricked into it. They thought they were just getting a little tasting cup.
This is part of the let's not be responsible for ourselves trend in America, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it's amazing. You'd look at the pronouncements of some of these people, and they have identified all talk of individual responsibility is something that has to be overcome. They talk about how this is just wool over the public's eyes, and they're never going to win their battle unless they can get people to discard ideas that somehow or other you and I are responsible for what we eat and drink.
Now, you mentioned Michael Jacobson. He's the head of the Center for Science and the Public Interest. That's what he and his other food nannies call their organization. And I've met Michael, and I think that he truly believes what he says. I think he has bought into his agenda 100%. And I mention that because I think some of these other people, particularly those who are behind some of these lawsuits and some of these law professors like John Banjoff and others who you're very familiar with, I think that they're not doing it for the cause as much as they are for a job.
Well, you have a very interesting alliance here because you have someone like Jacobson who has been working, as you say, on this issue for years and years, for the most part just doing it by press conferences and hectoring the public and publicizing these things, the traditional way in which you keep a public issue in the newspapers. And a couple years ago, what does his group do? But it sets up a permanent new litigation arm whose charter is to forge alliances with lawyers and law professors out there who may have very different agendas. Now, one of the guys involved in this, I mentioned Professor Daynard, it was so interesting during the whole tobacco episode because he was quoted in the papers hundreds of times, just as if he were a law professor who was interested in the area and happened to comment. No one ever described him as one of the lawyers actually filing the lawsuits or anything. Well, what happens when they have their $200-and-some billion settlement, but he pops up like a jack-in-the-box saying, incidentally, I had an unannounced private agreement with the lawyers to give me 5% of their fees, so please give me, he didn't give the number, but it was like $150 million that he claimed to be entitled to. And that got in the papers because the other lawyers said, whoa, we never promised you a thing. Show us the paper we signed. You're not entitled to that. And, it went to litigation, and then it was settled.
When these attorneys who are behind this want to start up this cause and pick Coke and Pepsi and the other soda companies, those are the two monsters, and put them in the crosshairs, as I call it, Do they start with people who come to them who say, I have been injured by this, what can I do? Or do they start with the agenda and go find people who fit the cause?
It is the second of these, not the first, because, yes, every so often someone will walk into their office who's an ideal client, but that's the old way of doing things. The new way of doing things is you decide who you want to sue, you decide what the most lucrative way of suing them is, and then you go out and find some sympathetic, if not adorable, client who's going to be great with the media. And in Massachusetts, where they filed, or they're planning to file, the first of the cases against the soft drink companies, they advertised in the newspapers saying, please step forward and we'll see if you're the right ones. And I find it very amusing that months later, they still don't have a client. They say, this is what's holding up filing the suit, is we haven't found a client who we want to work with.
We've got a cause. If only we could find somebody who was injured.
And it stands on its head, the old idea of legal ethics, which is that lawyers are supposed to wait patiently and not not stir up litigation until they've got someone who's genuinely aggrieved. Now it goes on at the lawyer's request, and very often, of course, for the lawyer's profit or ideological gain.
Walter, if these things did get to court, what would the reaction be from the bench, do you think? And would it be from the bench or would it be a jury?
It's always something I hesitate to predict because you never know what sorts of laws are out there and what kind of interesting loopholes they have. As far as whether it will be before a jury or not, this is often up to the lawyers who file a case. If they couch the case one way, they are entitled to get a jury to hear it. As in the tobacco case, where their polling was telling them that juries would tend to vote down the thing, they couched the case against tobacco in such a way as not to reach a jury in the Mississippi case, which is the leading one, because they were afraid of losing before juries. So this particular one is going to call on invoke a Massachusetts statute that entitles them to $25 per transaction if anything is misadvertised or not sold with proper disclosures, et cetera, et cetera. Their argument is going to be every time a kid has bought a soda out of a vending machine for the last who knows how many umpteen years, $25 fine is owing, and could we have some of it, please?
Because the soda companies didn't warn you, hey, we have sugar in here.
Yeah, because the disclosures should have been more extensive. And it's interesting, you can always argue that. You know, even if there's a big, bright warning on the package saying don't, warning, 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 you still can argue that it should have been a bigger point size and brighter colors and so forth. So they can always argue that and then just roll the dice, see if they get a sympathetic judge.
In the beginning of our conversation, you and I both alluded to the obesity lawsuits involving the fast food companies. Where do those stand now? Are those pretty much done?
Believe it or not, they are dragging on. And they aren't in the newspapers anymore, but the McDonald's one, I believe, was kept going by the judge, who said that it was faulty, but the complainants could go back and fix the things that were wrong with it, and he would hear it again. And it's not considered to have a very good chance, but the fact that it got as far as it did is itself pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's the one. I think the kid was, 13 years old, 250 pounds, ate McDonald's for three meals a day, and for some reason that was McDonald's fault, not his parents.
Yeah, the original plaintiff was actually middle-aged and had developed diabetes and other things because he'd been going in pretty much his whole adult life, so far as I remember.
And as I recall, McDonald's went to his house, handcuffed him, took him down there, and forced Big Macs down his gullet.
Well, he kept wandering into those restaurants thinking he was going to get celery sticks. Imagine his surprise 20 years later.
You know, I would love to see the statistics because there actually has been an effect of these lawsuits, and that is that places like McDonald's and Wendy's and others now have salads, and if you want to have, instead of fries, and you want to get an apple, you can have that. And, you know, even places like the St. Louis Bread Company, part of the Panera chain, they now, if you don't want to get chips, you can get an apple or something else. So maybe those lawsuits are having a positive effect in one way. But on the other hand, I'm a marketplace kind of guy, and I think if the public really wanted it, then the businesses should have given it to them, not out of fear of some giant lawsuit that could crush them.
Yeah, I have no doubt that public tastes are trending, and I'm glad they're trending, toward healthier food. And that's going to have its effect whichever way. It can be paradoxical in the case of these salads, because you analyze the calorie count of these salads. They tried introducing them time after time. The public never bought them until finally they came out with salads that had almost as many calories as the sandwiches, and then that's when the public bit.
That's because the dressing had fat in it.
Finally the salads taste good. Of course they taste good. It's almost as fattening as the sandwiches.
There you go. All right, Walter, your new book is called The Rule of Lawyers, right?
Yes.
And the website, which I visit on a regular basis, is called overlawyered.com. I don't agree with some of the stuff that Walter writes about, but he's absolutely on the money with this. Also has an op-ed in today's LA Times, which I have linked to from my website, harrisonline.com. Walter is a senior fellow of the Manhattan Institute, and I appreciate your time here today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Walter Olson on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.